Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this extra episode, as you likely know, the Jungle is a 3-mile-long homeless camp under I-5. It's been in the news frequently since a deadly shooting there on January 26th. Many of us have driven over it, maybe without thinking about the people who live under the freeway, in the dust and the mud, in all kinds of weather. What brought them there? What's it like? And why do so many residents prefer it to homeless shelters? The Seattle Public Library's Central Library hosted a discussion of the Jungle on June 3rd. KUOW reporter Joshua McNichols moderated a panel including current and former Jungle residents and Real Change director Tim Harris. The event was presented in partnership with KUOW and the Real Change Homeless Empowerment Project. Please note, this recording contains language of an adult nature. Here, Joshua McNichols introduces the program.
The word jungle, it suggests wildness and animals. There's been violence there, most notably a shooting in January that killed 2 and wounded 3 more. After the shooting, Kate O'Connell-Walters and I started working on a series of stories and interviews about the jungle. We learned that on most days, it's not as scary as you might think. We figured that out by just shutting up and listening to the people we met there. We brought some of these people to the Seattle Public Library so that you could meet them too, along with Real Change's Tim Harris. The first voice you're going to hear is Brandy Osborne. She's a relatively new jungle resident. I asked her what part of the jungle she lives in.
Close to the dog park, adjacent to I-90.
That's right. And how long have you lived there?
Since September. My location in the jungle would be known as the old jungle. That's what they refer to it as out there.
Yeah. And do you remember, you're not there, you haven't been that long there that long. When did you first come there?
In September of this year. I was a resident of Nicholsville on Dearborn Street until I was asked to leave the camp. I immediately went across the street to the jungle and set up camp there, and I've been there ever since.
And because you're kind of a new resident, I'm hoping we can take you back to your first impressions of the jungle, the first time that you saw it. Maybe it was before you lived there, but can you remember that first time that you saw the jungle and what your impressions were?
I always heard about the jungle. I heard it wasn't a place that you want to go to. And I heard about the drugs, I've heard about the violence, but I'd never actually seen it. Living in Nicholsville across the street from what they call the jungle, I got to know the jungle before I got to know the jungle, so to speak. I took a former resident of Nicholsville into the jungle where she had come from as a barred camper from Nicholsville. I was helping her move her belongings back into the jungle, which was a no-no. You're not supposed to do that. The people from the jungle don't come back and forth into this camp. So I was kind of risking my own safety and home, but I had to help her, and I was scared to death because I had just heard the horror stories of the place. There was a lot of garbage, so I was kind of taken aback by that, but I was greeted by everybody. Everybody said hello to me. Nobody tried to push or peddle any drugs on me. They were more worried about where I was going to sleep or where somebody else was going to sleep and getting their camp set up and covered. Safe from the weather and made sure everything was okay. It was pretty quick. I just took her and her stuff across the street. She walked me through a couple of trails and explained what some areas were. And then I went back across the street to camp and continued about my day. 4 months later, I was moving my own stuff across the street because I had nowhere else to go. No longer having the safety net of that encampment where it was a legal place to sleep.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that first night there, but before we do that, I want to hear just a little bit more about what you had heard about the jungle in Nicholsville, because in a way that reflects how we all perceive it at first as outsiders. What were your interactions with jungle residents, or what were the horror stories that you'd heard when you were in Nicholsville?
Well, when I was in Nicholsville, I didn't really hear any of the stories so much as I did before I became a member of Nicholsville. We had many of the residents coming to and from our camp, curious on how they could live there in our camp. So that's pretty much all we were exposed to. There were no stories. We kind of saw it, firsthand. There were two times I remember hearing gunshots from our security desk at the front. So that was kind of scary. It happens, though. Unfortunately, it happens. People come in there and they do stupid things and they make bad decisions. It happens everywhere. But it was right across the street, you know. Of course, there's stories of drugs and other things that happen. And yes, they're there. They're everywhere also. But I haven't been exposed to any of those situations myself. I just moved into my tent and closed my door and stay safe and keep to myself and keep my nose out of trouble. And I seem to be okay. I'm more scared of where I'm going to go or end up next.
So on that first night when you were staying there, can you remember what you were thinking, what you were feeling?
I was relieved, actually. When I was asked to leave Nicholsville, I felt virtually that was the end of everything. I had nothing left. I had no more safety. And I was told to move to the jungle by somebody that is a big name out there, a big badass man, you know, the drug dealer guy. And he said, you come live up by me with my cousin, and you'll be safe. Nobody will bother you. Nobody will take your stuff, and you'll be okay. And I told my boyfriend that at the time, and he said, okay, that's where we'll go. And we went, and he wasn't lying. I have been safe. I have been taken care of. I have not had my belongings stolen from me. I've not had anything taken from me. And I really do feel that if something were to happen to me in or out of the jungle, if I ran up that street screaming for help, I guarantee you I'd have 20 or 30 people coming to help me.
When I hear you recounting that story, I hear, and I wanted to say one more thing to the crowd. If you have questions that you think of at any time, you can write them on a card and pass them to the side, and somebody at the side of the aisle can hold them up or maybe raise your hand to let us know that the card's coming or something like that. We also have a Twitter account where you can send questions too, and Ross is going to be collecting those, and we'll ask them as we go through. Brandy, I wanted to take you back to, you mentioned, I heard as you were telling that story, some emotions come up, and I'm wondering what those feelings are rooted in. What's making you feel that way when you're talking about this first experience in the jungle?
It's rooted, well, I'm upset, but it's initially rooted by anger. To go way back, none of it really matters now, but I shouldn't have been put in that position when I was put in that position, period. I did nothing wrong at Nicholsville when I was there. I was the bookkeeper. I managed the camp. I did everything I was supposed to do, and I did it very well. And, well, I guess too well. So I was angry. But it hurts. It's sad, you know, just to know that I lost that part of my family from Nicholsville. Now they're gone anyway, so they're not around anymore except for Skylar. Hi, Skylar.
Okay, and then last, before we go to Kevin, and I'm going to introduce each person who's speaking kind of as we go rather than giving you a full list at the front. But Brandy, before we go on to Kevin, can you give us sort of a description of the length and breadth of the jungle and what it feels like in different parts?
Well, I really haven't experienced the whole thing myself. The area where I am is kind of, I guess, offset from the actual jungle. It's all pretty much the same, though. You know, there's people that come and go all hours of the day and the night. And sometimes you turn the corner and there's somebody sitting in a chair coloring a coloring book. Somebody's smoking a cigarette. Somebody's watching TV because they have generators up there. A lot of people are employed and they have jobs. They have families. They pay child support. And they do the things that they're supposed to do as good citizens and human beings. And, of course, there's other people that come and go. They do a little less, you know, and they have more issues than I do, but we're all there for each other any way that we can be, and I've never once come or gone and felt unsafe or threatened by people in or out of the jungle or in the surrounding area of where I am, which is close to Dearborn Street. But it's a large area, folks. And the part I'm in is not considered the jungle, according to the map that they're given in the papers. Either is another area. We're all the jungle. It's a lot bigger than people think it is. It goes pretty big. Several hundred people, I would estimate, live in the jungle.
And I should add that the length and the size and the number of people in the jungle all vary depending on who you talk to. When the city came out with its report that assessed kind of the conditions of the jungle, it defined this oval-shaped area that included some parts of the jungle and other parts that people usually consider the jungle. And that's the area that you live in, which is, as the jungle curves around I-90, there's some green areas around that. And we historically have considered that part of the jungle, but the city kind of left it out of its oval. And then, so I-5 has a bunch of spaces beneath it. There's space between the ground and the freeway, and it's out of the rain. A lot of people like it because it's covered. And it's about 3 miles long, and we think that there's, you know, I think Jeff Lilly of the Union Gospel Mission recently estimated that there's about 170 people left there. That's debatable, but it would be down from earlier estimates that are around 300 to 400 people, kind of depending on how you count it, if you're counting the people or counting the tents or things like that. So there's a lot of variation in how we define it, but it's a big area, and it's totally possible for someone to know one part of it but not to know another part of it because it's so long. Next, I'd like to go to Kevin Boggs. And Kevin, I'd like to ask you a couple questions. First, I'm wondering, Union Gospel Mission has been going out there and talking to some people. What's your impression of that experience been like?
Union, before I get by my own impression, like, they're an amazingly helpful organization. They help so many people. But I saw them, I see them come through every now and then, distributing water, granola bars, you guys need anything, socks. The first official notice I had of a deadline to move was given to me from the guys at the search and rescue vans that showed up last week, and still have no idea where we're going, but they were unable to, give us detailed, where we're going information, but they did say that, they would be happy to drive us from the jungle to where we needed to go, where we'd pack up our stuff and be ready to leave. But I'm hesitant to get ready to leave with no destination clear. That's kind of a...
Yeah. And then I'm curious about, you spoke to me a little bit earlier before the forum here, about the sense of community that you felt there. And one time in particular when you felt that was kind of made apparent, when you became aware of that in a big way. Can you describe that?
Obviously, the trigger behind all of this happening is the well-publicized disaster that killed two people and wounded the shooting. My tent was roughly 20 yards away from the center of the event. I just thought, I had no idea what the sounds were. I heard gunshots, and in retrospect knew what they were, but didn't at the time until the police searchlights hit the side of my tent, blinding me, and in my underwear, shoeless, in 35-degree weather, I was damn near thrown down the hill, like, get out now. Is anyone else in your tent? Get out now. And I mean, obviously people were dead. It was important for them to clear the tents and make sure no one was there, but you'd think I could have put on shoes. Anyway, the sense of having a community that protects you is... Before finding the jungle, I was homeless in a tent, and I decided on Lake City would be a good place. And while trying to maintain income, I was working as a temp agency. Every single time I returned home, I think maybe once this did not happen, somebody had found my tent and took whatever they wanted, ransacked anything else. I felt like I was catching up every single day, buying what I needed to survive over and over again. And then I found the jungle, and since the very first day I was there, the people there back each other up. You cannot just traipse through the jungle as a stranger, as an unknown quantity. You are going to get challenged, and it's not in an offensive way. It's in a protective way, like, you know, who are you? The first time I arrived at the jungle, I had no idea where I was or what I just was looking for a shady place. I was beginning drug treatment at the Evergreen Treatment Services down there. It seemed like a shady place to go up there and sit. So I did. I saw other people around but didn't pay them any attention. And 30 seconds later, somebody goes, "Hey, get up. You can't stay here. Leave." I'm like, "Whatever, you don't own the place." And a couple minutes later, you know, the guy that's still in charge of the security came up and goes, "You have two choices, leave now or leave now with my foot in your ass. Get out." As, you know, challenging as that was, I suddenly realized, like, I gotta live here. Like, this is important. Like, this is why I'm getting robbed every day, is because this isn't happening where I live. I asked permission and was told, "Yeah, thanks for asking, actually. You know, yeah, put your tent over there." It was ways away from the center of things because I was an unknown person and needed to build trust. And I want to say, too, that I was an unknown 6-foot male, large guy, potentially dangerous. That's why I was challenged. Any female I've ever seen arrive as a stranger is instantly safe. Like, there's no challenge there ever. And, you know, people have come through, especially when Nicholsville closed, and it was almost like a flood of refugees coming through. And, you know, some we knew, and you know, the little grassy area where Airport Wave spreads out there, that they kept cleaning up, and then tents would spring up the very next day. Now it's crowded with tents, and, you know, it's Nicholsville all over again, but even more temporary. I just don't know.
So when the shooting happened,
yeah,
you mentioned how you guys responded to that by backing each other up in a way. What you said to me earlier revealed something about why so many people were hurt that night.
Well, now that I've been an accepted member of the community, I know exactly what I would do were that to happen again. I would, you know, without hesitation, I would jump up in front of anybody being threatened. You know, there are ways you can die, and one of them is of an overdose as a junkie. And I've had that, you know, flash in front of me a few times. The other is defending persons that your neighbor. You know, I mean, anyone that I think I live with now would not hesitate to. That's why so many people were easy to shoot. Nobody split. Nobody ran when that happened. Everybody jumped up to protect, you know themselves, their girlfriends.
Can you hold the mic up to your mouth?
They were bunched in a group and therefore were the easy targets that they were. You know, people who knew that was coming might have run away and saved their own skin. I mean, it takes a minute to shoot 5 people. But they didn't. They stayed right there. And I think instinctively, you know, homeless people need to be in a community to protect each other. And, you know, should you see a homeless guy ostracized from his own community, he's probably not trustworthy, you know? But there's very few people I've ever met in the jungle that come anywhere near that.
The thing that story tells me is that the bonds that develop there through whatever circumstances mean something, and that if you have to leave it behind,
it means
you
a
lose
lot.
Something.
One of the things that methadone treatment does is it gives you the stability to take care of mistakes you've made in the past as an addict. A few of those things were, you know, criminal charges I had to deal with, misdemeanors for the most part. I was jailed for one of them by surprise for 19 days, just vanished from my place in the jungle from my tent there, not knowing what I would return to, maybe back to zero. When I got back, I had every single thing that I had owned untouched, protected by the people that I now regard as family, because of that mostly, and that's a large part of the reason why I would not hesitate to defend any of them, because they took care of me. I mean, can you imagine the terror of not even knowing if you had any place to sleep, you know, coming out of jail? And I had every damn thing I owned, including valuables that I had left there. Nobody touched a thing, and they knew I'd been gone. You know, where you been? You know, and it was, you know, being, you know, a masculine, you know, American male, I'm not allowed to get all touched unless I turn around and run away. But, man, I was bawling almost. You know, I had to leave and not let anybody see. you know, my God, you guys took care of my stuff. Like, this is not what most people... I've heard a lot of opinions about how people believe we live, and that's not one of them.
We've got a couple, before we go to you, Donald, we've got a couple questions from people in the audience. One, and I'm going to direct this to you, Brandy. What are the spoken, and this may these may be things that you've just learned recently, but what are the spoken or unspoken rules that govern the jungle, and what purpose do you think those rules serve?
I'm sorry, what was the second part?
Well, first question is, what are the spoken or unspoken rules that govern the jungle? Maybe things that you've discovered recently as a new person there.
I don't really know if there's a set of spoken rules as far as the jungle goes. I would advise that you know where you're going and who you want to see when you go. You don't want to wander into this big area of wooded, grassy land with rats running around and not knowing where you're going. People will look at you as if, what the hell are you doing here, if you look out of place. There's really only rule is respect others, you know, and they will respect you. Do unto others as they would do unto you, so to speak. If they feel threatened of any harm, they're going to defend themselves. They do govern themselves. They have security people that work five-hour shifts and stand at the door, block the camps, enter the caves, exit the caves, and go back and forth to make sure that there aren't people just, you know, sitting around watching other people, stalking them, so to speak. Just behave yourselves, you know. That's pretty much just like any rule of the world, like, it's the
so
same
if you,
there.
If you saw somebody just kind of sitting around that was a stranger, and they were just sitting on a stump or something and just watching people, what would you do? Who would you tell?
Well, we see it all the time. I'm a people person. I'm an outspoken person, and I want to know who is who they are, especially those that come around where I'm living. There's only four of us, four sets of tents, about eight people, two in each tent. If I see somebody that doesn't belong there, I ask them, what do they need? Who are they here to see? Sometimes they're just passing by, looking for a missing relative, perhaps, or they want to find a specific person that used to live in this spot where you are, and they're no longer there. 6 times out of 10, I send them in the right direction, tell them how to get there, and they go. Say thank you very much, and off they go.
How about you, Kevin? Anything to add to that in terms of rules?
Yeah, you know, when a gangster in a movie says the word respect, what he means is fear. And the respect I feel for my neighbors in the jungle has nothing to do with, you know, the respect or whatever that means. It's, you know, I genuinely respect their opinions, what they have to say, their you know, anything that, in the same way that you would, you know, respect your friendly neighbor that, you know, baked you an apple pie when you moved in. You know, it's just the same thing as a regular neighbor, you know?
That's fine.
Okay, one more question for Brandy before Donald. You just got an order to move by the city. Well, I don't know if you've gotten one of those personally, but you may soon at some point. We don't know how hard the city will hold on to that deadline or when these orders will come, but we assume at some point you're going to get an order to move by the city. Where will you go?
I may not go anywhere. I may sit in my tent door and say, screw you. And thank you, folks. And that's, no, don't get me wrong, that's not just to defend the jungle. This is to defend homeless men, women, children, and animals everywhere. Somebody has to stand up for what they believe in. I don't think they can just keep pushing us all around the neighborhood, you know, and putting us on our little island where they want us so they can run us like robots. Unfortunately, people are still going to be homeless. People are still going to be in your green belts, your trees, your backyard, wherever they may be. And we need to stand together and be unified. I just might stay in my tent and make them move me.
All right. We're going to move now to Donald Moorhead. You're a former jungle resident.
And yes, that's correct.
And now you're housed. So I'd like to learn more about your path. First, I'm wondering, what was your path? Can you describe first where you used to live, how long you lived there when you were in the jungle, and what it was like when you were there?
Well, like she said, the jungle is not just one area. Jungle, it's you said 60 people? No way. It's like about 400 people in the jungle.
Yeah,
and it's different areas. You got what is that? What's that area over there where they used to have the tent city?
Nicholasville on Dearborn.
Yeah, Dearborn. You got up there by the highway. You
there's
got
Harborview. There's SeaTac
up under the bridge. You got SeaTac over there by the park. It's like about 7 different areas. I stayed in like 2 of them. I stayed when you first come in the jungle. That was the old one, and then I moved from there up under the bridge. What you see on TV. It's a lot of people that move there now, but this was like 6, maybe 8 years ago, you know.
How long did you live in the jungle?
For like 3 years, but see, you can't go and sell papers or try to get a job when you're coming out of there. You drive once you're up under that bridge, but when it's dry outside, when the sun is out, you're dusty because there's a lot of dust under there. And when it's wet outside, you cool once you're up under that bridge, but once you come past that bridge, you got to go through mud. And so by the time you get to the street, you look like you done just crawled out the garbage can. So, you know, it's hard to, sometimes you have to take an extra change of clothes with a backpack, then when you get to the street, switch them over. So I got kind of tired of doing that, and so I moved from up under that bridge. Where they feed, you know, where they feed on Sundays, the church that come feed, that's
yes.
Where I stay, right down there.
Yep.
Okay, so it's right there on Airport Way. Is that Airport Way right there?
Was Walker or something?
Yeah, exactly. So I moved from there to Spokane up under the bridge. That was a high end. That's what we call it, because it's nice and dry and concrete, you know. But when you, like you say, the jungle, it's like you live in packs. You have to live in packs to keep your stuff from getting took, or you'll never get ahead. Trying to get ahead is impossible if you don't live in packs. You know, what I mean by packs is 3, 4, 5 people in a group. So when if somebody's out that morning, somebody's there that morning. Somebody's out there, come in that evening, then somebody's gone at night. Somebody's always around, is what I'm saying. That way your camp don't never get raided and your stuff took. You have a chance of surviving.
So Donald, you were in the jungle for about 3 years, and at some point there was a transformation for you, and you had, I want to go through that with you and learn about that journey. And I want to start by asking you about a low point. Can you recall a particular low day and what the things you were struggling with and the things that you felt like meant that this was the place where you had to be? Can you walk me through a hypothetical or a typical low day?
When you get to the point where you constantly trying to get ahead, and you come back and the city or somebody that went through your tent and say, like, I was trying to get all my stuff to go back to work construction. I got the boots, the pants, the hard hat, and the rain gear pants. I come back that evening, all that's gone. Just not getting the jacket. Stuff like that, you know. All your camp been raided, this, that, and other. It's hard to get ahead when you're like that. Stuff like that makes you want to walk in front of a bus, go hop off a bridge. You know what I mean? It's like every time you turn a corner, you walk into a brick wall. A door is being slammed on you. No matter what you do, 5, 6 months in a row, it's the same thing over and over again. You know, I have PTSD. When you have depression and have that type of problem, that plays a part in there too. You know, that really makes it bow down on you more. You know, it's like you got a black cloud over your head everywhere you walk, and it's raining on you and everybody else in the sunshine. You know what I mean?
How did you cope with that feeling?
Well, drinking and smoking weed every day. Wake up, I had a beer beside me in a doobie. Go to sleep, I had a beer beside me in a doobie. That's how I was coping with it until I got sick. My body, you do that so long, your body breaks down. It lets you know, hold on, homie, you got to slow up. I can't take this much longer. You know what I mean? So I caught pneumonia. When you out there and you ain't got nobody to help you get well and you sick, that's when you start, everything started hitting here, hitting home. I caught pneumonia, went to the hospital. They gave me the wrong medicine. I got sicker. Ain't no ambulance gonna come up in no jungle and get you. You just one dead, you know what I'm saying? You just out. So once you go back to the hospital, I say, I got to do something or I'm going to die up here. So Union Gospel Mission, never would I sleep in that place again. I laid my jacket down. I laid my jacket down like this here. I went in there to brush my teeth. When I came back, it was moving by itself. And I'm like, what the hell? I took the broom and picked it up, showed the guy at the desk. It was bugs all over my jacket from just going to brush my teeth. And I said, man, what's up with this, man? Well, I ain't putting this back on. Well, don't tell me. Go upstairs and tell them. What I supposed to do about it? I go upstairs, they said, well, report it. Okay, I reported, still nothing is done. I'm not going back to that place no more. A guy sitting beside you, feet smell so bad you can't even breathe. You know? No. So with that in mind, the outreach place of Union Gospel Mission is the only good thing about that, because they come out, they give you hot meals in certain areas of the jungle. Now, they're not going to go all the way in the jungle either.
They didn't come to see me until yesterday.
You know what I'm saying? On the outskirts, where the bridge is, and like on Dearborn over there in that area, mm-hmm. They'll come to them spots. But then they're going to go inside. They won't dare do that.
Yeah. No. So they reached out to you?
Yeah, it was a guy named Easy. And he kept saying, man, you know, you can go to treatment. Because every time he talked to me, I'm like, yeah, man, I hate blowing smoke at him. You know? So he was like, you know, you can go into treatment and I can get you housing. And I thought about that when I got sick. I said, for real, how much I'm going to have to pay rent? I ain't got no money. That's the thing that I help people in the jungle. They always talking about affordable housing. What's affordable? What do you call affordable?
You got it.
You live in affordable housing.
You know, it's like they say affordable just to blow you off, because the affordable price range is from $900 to $1,400. Okay, Social Security check is what, $700? Some of them $650? So how is it affordable? How are you going to pay that? So I don't see where it's affordable. Now, when you change that up and say low-income housing, now you're talking. People can survive. People can live. That's what I'm on right now, low-income housing. And if it wasn't for that, I'll still be in that jungle, or I'll be over there on Spokane Street in the Hilton. That's what we call up under the bridge, the Hilton.
Yeah. All right, we're starting to get some questions built up. But real quickly, I just want to understand the end of your path to housing now. I understand you got a job with Real Change, and now where are you living?
Well, Real Change is what kept money in my pocket, you know. I'll tell them, watch my account, man. I'm going to sell some papers. I come back. I got $40, $60 in my pocket. I said, man, I appreciate that. Here, go get some beer. And they know I needed some beer, too. But now that I'm changing the way I'm doing things, I got to think, man, I got to do everything different now to stop drinking and start smoking weed. I got to change up my whole surrounding and, you know, my whole environment. Meaning, okay, I got to go into treatment and then figure out from there. In order to get myself well again, or I won't be around to do nothing. Yeah. I'll be dead. You know what I mean? So I was like forced into forced into it because I wanted to get well. If I didn't want to get well, I was burying myself.
Yeah. You know, okay, so. we're gonna go through some of these questions, and then we're gonna come to you, Tim Harris of Real Change. So I'm going to go through some of these quickly because we're getting a lot of them coming in. First, let's start with, I'm going to ask each of you one of these, so not ask everybody every question, but Brandy, how do residents of the jungle feel about shelters?
Hell no, we won't go.
Why?
How much time do we have?
Tell you what, give us the top three reasons.
Okay, well, speaking for just myself, I've been homeless since 2010. I've been in Tent City 3, Tent City 4, Nicholsville. All those times, I was happy to sleep in a tent. I went to one indoor shelter. I slept there for one night. Never again. And it was an all-woman shelter. Never again. Do you remember what he said about the bugs? Bed bugs live inside, not outside, for one. For two, if you're a couple, they force you apart in a shelter. You cannot stay together. If you have animals that are not service animals and just pets, you're not going to get into shelter. It's just, they put so many limitations and stipulations on things. Women do not feel safe, especially if they've been sexually assaulted or abused. If they have PTSD, it's a lot of women, unfortunately, just, it's a big safety issue. They've had a lot of issues in the past, and they're just absolutely traumatized. Sure, absolutely. Even if they're housed with only women, sometimes that can be a more volatile situation. Just believe it or not, we're safer where we are. I couldn't point out one person that would go into shelter. If you give me housing tomorrow, low-income housing, Section 8, HUD, whatever the case may be, take me from this tent door to my new front door and give me a key. I'm all over it.
Okay, now I'm going to ask this question to Kevin. Kevin, what are common health issues facing people who live in the jungle? This is from Australia via Twitter. What are some of the common health issues people face in the jungle, and what supplies and health services are most needed?
Almost all of the risk to our health happens to those who are continuing addicts and take that risk to themselves. Speaking for myself, I've actually been a sober resident of the jungle nearly my entire time there. Thank God for the clinic for me. And I see a lot of risk going on around me, but as far as, you know, oh, I've got a cold or anything like that, that doesn't really, I don't see that ever. I did see a victim, a woman who had been attacked over by the bus depot. Well, she ran up the hill for help because she knew us. You know, she had physical wounds, and she got, you know, a couple people took her to Harborview, you know, walked her there. You know, nobody's calling 911 from there or anything like that. But as far as sickness and health issues, you know, I hear a lot of rumors that...
What about foot issues? I've heard a lot talking with people experiencing homelessness about problems with their feet.
Well, that has to do with never taking off your socks because there's no place to take a shower. And that's why replacement socks are actually a hugely important commodity that gets passed out by some of the people that help. Never take off your socks for a month, and then you do, and all of a sudden you notice your toenails are black, and you're like, what's that? And you go to touch them, and they come off of your toes. You know, it's not healthy to not ever wash your feet, but it's not the main target, you know, when you have to keep, you know, just socially presentable for everyone around. And, like trying to maintain employment when you are covered with, you know, what is obviously dust from the jungle. And, you know, this is about as good as it gets for me. And, I think, you know, with the shoes as dirty as I get, I'm pretty obviously belonging to where I live, you know, if you see me anywhere near there. But health-wise, I think a lot of it is exaggerated. I think a lot of the opinions people have that are, you know, real caring concerns for us are yet, you know, exaggerations. And I know a lot of the people in Seattle feel that, you know, this eviction is, you know, despite our wishes, what's really best for us? You know, thanks. You know, I understand having these, you know, beliefs, and, you know, it's really sensational news reporting to focus on the pile of human excrement with, rigs, syringes stuck into it, and, keep it focused on that where you talk about, the conditions in the jungle. I myself do not ever smell even a whiff of, human waste. Yes, you can find syringes, but our area in the central jungle, we rake the dirt. I mean, there's not even cigarette butts littered near our place. We have 50-gallon garbage cans every 50 yards, which we empty, as soon as they get full, down the dumpster by the recycling plant. We live as clean as the dirt will allow us to be. The only thing that isn't an exaggeration, especially right now, is the rat population, which, requires we just, keep our food in ice chests and not, freak out when we hear a squeak right next to our feet.
And that is true. The area that they call the caves where the shooting happened and where you've been camping is a meticulously clean area. It's incredibly well kept, in part because there's a recycling plant down below that gives you guys a place to put some garbage and stuff. But there are other areas with a lot more garbage. And there's
curiosity,
areas.
When I first got there and was accepted, I was assigned to pitch my tent so far away from the main community that I decided to walk as far as I could. I was amazed at how far it went, but there were people living in conditions that were obviously ridiculous. People living in garbage, people who didn't care, people who were so high and using so much drugs or somehow obtaining, they were literally living in a stupor. Yeah, it can get bad if you do not take care of yourself, but so can your house in Lake City.
I'd like to turn to Tim Harris for a few questions. Tim, I'm wondering, you've been covering this a lot with Real Change, and I'm starting to get the sense that the conversation that we're hearing is about more than just the jungle. It's about some bigger questions that we're grappling with as a city. What's your take on that? What do you see? What's the big picture?
Yeah, I think that the jungle is more of a symptom than a cause of the issues that that we find there. There's a lot of things that are feeding the growing population of homeless people and that are driving the growing population of homeless people in Seattle, particularly the unsheltered count. We have an unprecedented heroin epidemic going on in this city. Rents are rising at record levels. We saw rents go up by 11% over the month of May alone, which is just mind-blowing because a generally accepted statistic is that for every 10% an increase in rental costs, you can expect about a 15% increase in homelessness. And we've seen that turn out to be roughly true here in Seattle. We are 47th in the nation as a state in funding mental health services. It's very hard to get into drug treatment without jumping through a lot of hoops that are hard for desperate people with a lot of pressure in their lives to be able to pull off. We have a housing crisis. We have a shelter crisis in this city. There's a whole lot of desperate people trying to survive on, whatever terms they can in a city where roughly one in every three homeless people is living outside.
Tim, we're live streaming this on Facebook, and we have a comment where somebody's asking, how do residents feel about the city? Well, I guess this is a question to residents, but I'll ask you too, and then I'll ask one of you guys, whoever wants to answer most. How do residents feel about the city partnering with the Union Gospel Mission?
The partnership with the Union Gospel Mission? I'll tell you my opinion on that. The organizations that generally do outreach in Seattle and really have a lot of experience with folks in the jungle and unsheltered people are DESC and REACH, and neither of those organizations were approached for that work, and it's probably because they don't want to go in. They refuse to go in there with security. Because that gets in the way of the relationships that are essential for them to form with people to get to know them and find out what they need. But UGM, didn't have that problem. And they've been in this position before to be able to pick up contract work from the city to help move people out of encampments quickly. So that seems to be an area of specialty for them.
Yeah. And before I go to you, Kevin, I wanted to mention that we did reach out to Union Gospel Mission, but they were changing public information officers, and somebody got, Jeff Lilly got sick, so they weren't able to come here, because we'd love to get their take on it, too.
I mean, the phrase that comes up with advocates a lot is outreach to nowhere, you know?
Okay, Kevin, I want to ask you as a...
Put as many outreach workers on the ground as you want, and unless you've got real options for them to give people, you're wasting your time.
Kevin, what's your take on the outreach you've seen?
You know, when I said UGM was, you know, a great organization, I really meant it, and the people that are covered with lice and that are functionless without, you know, constant alcohol, those people need that place. The people that actually sleep there all the time probably couldn't function without that place. That's why they're important. Not for me personally. I also would not go near the front door. But that's just my own thing. When applying for housing, I was, especially for REACH and stuff like that, I was strangely told that I'm too high functioning. I'm too high functioning. I'm sober. Sorry, you're out of luck. You need to be, you know, an incapacitated, constantly high person to even get help. And that's no joke. I talked to counselors, couldn't find any organizations that, you know, would listen to me speak and then go, this is for people who need a lot more help than you. You know, all I need is a boost to get a job where I can, you know, take a shower and be clean and get employed. I can do that. You know, I can do that once I have a place. That's all I need. I don't need, you know, people, you know, oh, so you're looking to not pay rent.
Yeah, I'm gonna direct this question to Donald, because we haven't heard from you for a little while, and you've gotten out in a way, you've gotten some help. So I have somebody who sent in this card that says, how can the community help? You're not there now, but in terms of somebody who's received and responded to help, what would be your impression of an answer to that question? How can the community help?
How can the community help?
Yeah.
They're building 19,000 high-rises, and 46 bike lanes. How about one low-income housing?
Yeah.
How about one high rise for that? Just one.
Right. Did the official declaration of emergency in the situation, like, floor anybody else? I couldn't believe it when I heard that the, you know, it was officially like a hurricane, you know?
Right. Tim, here's a question for you. What, as somebody who thinks about words a lot with a printed publication, what do you think would be a good, and I'd like to get you guys' take on this too, but what do you think would be a good alternative name for the jungle, besides the jungle, since it has these problems with this word?
How about homeless people's community? That's what it is. It's a homeless people's community. How about homeless people's community under I-5? It's so soda sopa.
From one point, yeah, it's a stigma, but from the point of protection, I'd rather be named, you know, inescapable death place or whatever you need to do to scare people the hell out of it.
How about you, Brandy? What do you think? What would be your...
Well, I think it's always going to be referred to as the jungle, just because that's what people know it as. You can name it whatever you want. Right now, it's my affordable housing.
Okay. And then, Donald, how about you? You got any impression on that? What would be a good word?
The adjustable neighborhood. Livable and adjustable neighborhood.
The city is trying to call it the Duwamish Green Belt. Anybody like that idea?
Huh?
The Duwamish Green Belt? No? Okay. So, let's see. What are some of the advantages of living in your encampment versus a shelter? You talked about the problems of a shelter, Brandy, but what are some of the advantages of living in the encampment?
unity. I feel like most people describe their situations living in shelters as lonely ones, especially if you're a couple. The first thing they do is tear you away from your partner and your loved one, and they separate you. I understand why they have to do that, but it sucks. You know, can't we come up with something better where we can keep the couples together and let them have their ferocious pit bull or whatever animal it is that is their pet that makes them feel better so they don't want to do drugs or drink alcohol, you know? Loneliness. When you have a sense of unity and you're a family, you come together as one and you feel strong and you empower one another to be able to make change. You can't do that alone in a shelter where they throw your ass out at 6 o'clock and you have to carry all your belongings with you. And then you have to be in by 10 p.m. And it's a hard life. It's a hard life. Shelter life is not a life for everybody. Some prefer it. Most don't. I don't sleep all day either, but I don't get up at 6 o'clock and I sure as hell can't carry all my belongings with me, especially, you know, if I have an animal or something. No vehicle, bus. I don't have bus tickets either, so you know, just I walk everywhere and I ride my bicycle, and it's a hard, but we survive and we do it together. It's hard to do when you're alone in a shelter.
I mentioned that I was interviewing one of the managers of DESC, Liz Worley Prieto, and I said, well, you know, why can't you accommodate? I understand it's hard, but what if you could just accommodate dogs and couples and addiction issues? And they do accommodate a lot of those addiction issues and things like that at the DESC, but there are certain things they can't. Where to put your bags, for example. And she said, oh, you mean housing? Like, that's housing.
There you go.
Let me just say this. When you are in your camp or is so-called the jungle or up under the Hyatt, which is a bridge out of the elements, you in your own house, you can do your own thing. You don't have to, like she say, get up at 5:30 in the morning. Who's up at 5:30 in the morning? The birds is not even up at 5:30 in the morning. You know? Get out. That's the first thing they say, get out.
Here's where I wish we had UGM or somebody here to answer this, but why do they have to kick people out at 5:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I wasn't really like, I don't want to know no more, because that's the whole purpose of me not going there, for the bugs, the earliness, the food. Bring the food on the truck on the outside is better than the food on the inside.
I sense Tim has an answer here.
Yeah, I can tell you that. That generally comes out of an agreement with the neighborhood that there won't be visible crowds of homeless people walking around by the time the downtown opens up, that
Thank
people
God.
Will have time to disperse. So it's just another one of the ways in which we hide our shame.
Okay, here's another question from somebody in the crowd. I should ask if the mic captains have identified anybody who wants to ask their question, person or anything like that. You guys can grab those and then maybe start taking them around if we have anybody. But let's see, I guess I'll ask this one to Brandy. What do you think are the improvements that could be provided to residents of the Greenbelt? What do you need?
You said Greenbelt.
That's what this person said. So.
What do we need? We need some porta potties. We need a designated space or enclosed area with a lock, maybe a dumpster. We're all more than willing to take our garbage out. We do bag up our garbage now, take it down the hill and put it in one spot, and it sits there in bags. The problem is it's not enclosed. So people come up the street, down the street. We call it diggling. You know, sometimes there's really good stuff there, and they will tear the bags open and throw all the garbage everywhere and make a bigger mess. We clean it again. They do it again. If we had an area with a lock, I think that would help a lot. We also just need to continue on providing the resources and information to people that we have available. You'd be surprised how many people don't know of certain things, you know? They know where to come to get stuff like that's bad for them, but they don't really know where to go to get stuff that's good for them so much. Some porta potties is wonderful. Human waste, can... I don't see that very often, you know. It's one thing to urinate somewhere, but I have no issues. I've never seen anything frightening like that in my life. I mean, thank God for the goodwill, because and Peter's Place is a great place. That's our day center. Hundreds and hundreds of people utilize that place every day. But just those two things alone would make a world of change in the jungle. And we have people that are willing to work and work shifts and earn money and raise our own money to help pay for these things. We don't just want them for free, and we don't want you all to pay for them. We want to help you guys. We want your help with us. We can live together as neighbors and not have to be known as those dirty, you know, whatevers.
Okay. Here's a question for Kevin. The city and state allocated a lot of money to clear the jungle. How would you like to see that money spent? This is a question someone wrote on a card and passed down.
To clear the, you know, refuse rather than the people, or clean it up, help us with the major stuff that we can't handle, the piles that are, you know, beyond our, you know, control. It would be nice to see them gone. Rat population is a disease-spreading force that can be a danger, though they haven't really been yet, but...
You're talking about the accumulation of garbage in some areas?
That breeds tens of thousands of... I mean, the rat explosion that's just happened over the last month is phenomenal. I mean, there's always been rats, but literally there's four or five, no matter what direction you're looking, and now there's little ones behind them all the time. You know, I hate rats. I mean, I've been at the Embarcadero of San Francisco, and those ones chase you. Luckily, these ones run away.
Did you notice it getting worse when they closed down Nicholsville?
Absolutely. Rats follow people no matter how affluent you are. Rats follow people.
They ran right down to the bottom, and they all ended up in the jungle.
In a wave.
Just like us.
Yeah, I just had a curiosity really quick. Besides the shooting that's closing the jungle, anyone recall reading about or seeing on TV roughly a whole year ago about another robbery shooting in Lake City? Anybody recall that? That was my house, and, you know, the shooting happened in my basement in an affluent neighborhood of Lake City, and the reason it happened is because there was drugs and money in a pile there. Just like there was a drugs and money in a pile in the jungle, it has nothing to do with the fact that the pile was in the jungle. It's just wherever there's drugs, you're going to have problems. That's the problem you need to take care of, not, you know, closing down the area to, like, make the new target of the robbers a random place. You don't know where the next pile of drugs and money is going to be.
Okay, here's a question for you. You know, you just described, you know, some of the problems that are emerging in the areas where there's heavy garbage accumulation, and we know that there's some crime, the shooting, we believe that it came from outsiders who came into the caves, but is it okay for people to live like that? I mean, in the rats,
live
danger.
A constant threat of gunfire? I mean, we're not in Beirut, but... again, there's things that you can do to protect yourself, like, you know, avoiding the table that the drug dealer's sitting at with the cash. That's an obvious place that everyone knows where to go if they're in addiction and needing to get their drugs. Just like any dealer's place is an obvious place to go. I'm sure you all have seen, you know, cars stopping at one particular house in your neighborhood all night long. It's the same thing in the jungle. I don't really know how to answer that question. It seems like it would seem to me that's lived through the drug life and out, a common sense issue. You'd be surprised how many really far out opinions I get from even close friends and family that know my situation. Like, oh great, you're getting sober. Oh wait, oh you're taking methadone. Oh, like that's not sobriety or anything else. The opinions are really strange when people, you know, especially when they cling to them, like you know. Well, I know you're sleeping, you know, within inches of piles of, you know, human waste and syringes, just how homeless people live.
Okay, we've got a couple questions by microphone now. We'll see what your question is, and then we'll decide who to direct.
First of all, how about calling it Jungle Community?
Oh, a suggestion is a name,
yeah.
Jungle Community.
Community. Then you have the one nest, the why take away jungle? It's a lovely name.
Would be much more inviting.
We've got the suggestion of calling it Jungle Community.
Yeah.
Okay, let's come down here and find
it. Okay, wait. I was not.
Oh, there's a question up there.
I was not here at the beginning. Sorry, I couldn't get in because it was full. So I might have missed a few things. But what I want to say is I'm very glad that you're here talking to us. I can't always understand what some of you say because you go so fast and mumble a bit. I'm sorry for what I missed. But I can, just from looking at you, I'm reminded how much talent is in the jungle, must be in the jungle. And what I wish for you is to stay instead of being hunted, I don't know, chased, mistreated like that, and instead be supporting in getting things that give you the dignity that you deserve. Showers, but what is it called? But anyway, thanks for pee to pee and poop. Yeah, well, I don't understand how the city can drive you away instead of coming and helping you. So that's what I want.
The city's reacting because there was a demand by, I'm sure, you know, voting public or whatever to react in some way. So they have to do something, right?
Okay, do we have another question up front?
Hi, my name's Buddy Mercado, and I've been homeless, too, for about the past 5 years. So let's not sugarcoat this, right? Basically, what we need is homes and jobs. It's really...
Oh, we lost the mic there.
They could pay everybody in that jungle to clean it up and put them in housing for the next year.
Yeah!
I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, it's not rocket science, man. And, that's a lot of money coming from the taxpayer. And pay the people that are living in the jungle, put them in housing, and put them to work cleaning it up and pay them to do it, too. I mean, that's what I say.
A very rare but nonetheless offensive opinion is that homeless people are lazy, and we work our ass off to keep that place clean, believe me. I mean,
I want to extend a question I asked earlier to Donald a little bit. Donald, we asked this question of, is it okay for people to live like this? And the reason I want to ask you is because you described a situation where you were in the throes of depression and you didn't see a way out, and somebody reached out to you and help connect you with services. And so it makes me wonder, is it okay to ignore your need that you had at that time and just, you know, or do we need to, you know, do we need sometimes to intervene in some ways?
You know, the people is more comfortable with being able to do and live the way they need to live. Although it's not the best for them, the word freedom it goes a long way. So if you can sleep in your tent to 7 o'clock and not 5:30, and then get up and go and wash your butt and go sell papers or go type for a job, come here to the library and type for a job or to the job fair right down the street, that's fine. So what I'm saying is, people feel comfortable living the way they want to live. They just need, because they need help to get a house the way and do the things that they want to do in real life, so to speak. You know what I mean?
So did your freedom help you or hinder you?
It helped me to stay alive, being able to have a community around me that helped me survive. You know, but when I got sick, what can they do for me? They can't help me get well. I had to help myself then. And if it wasn't for them saying, okay, the hospital gave me the wrong medicine. Once I did get the right medicine, now I need shelter immediately. That was the only way I could get shelter, was to go into a treatment center. You know?
Yeah.
That's the only way. So I had to take the quickest way out. It was no resources for me to be housed, and I was that sick. So there you have it. It's about time they declared emergency on the housing, on the homeless. It should have been declared 19,000 years ago.
Sad.
You know?
Yeah.
May I add something to his? I have the same problem in the opposite way as far as housing is concerned.
When it comes to finding something affordable as a room or a bed in somebody's home, you almost have to be a drug addict or an alcoholic to be able to be offered these places. What do you do with somebody like me that is neither? I'm just unemployed.
Yeah.
I'm in a lot of pain. I'm not getting the proper medical care or pain treatment that I need. I'm not going to take pills or all, you know. So I have that problem. I'm pretty much limited because I don't have an issue like that. So it happens on both ends.
Okay. Can I just say this? In Chicago and Minnesota and in Milwaukee, what they do is they have districts, and each district has a leader that knows what goes on in their community. And before the legislator go to making laws, they go to these districts, just like we are talking right here, and they ask them about these laws. What do they think? They vote on them before they just up and just say, oh, we're going to do this. They go to the districts and find out what's going to work and what's not going to work.
That's it. That reminds me of we've been hearing here about ideas of a navigation center where you could go and have, you know, it would be open 24/7 and all the service connections would be there. I don't know if that something like that would make a difference or if it would just be another shelter, you know. How about, Tim, you got any reason? Have you been following, Sally Bagshaw's been pushing for something like that that sounds a little different? It sounds like what they got in San Francisco, this navigation center. You got any perception of that, how that would work?
Well, a couple of things. One is that, I mean, a center like that would be a welcome development. On the other hand, we've been talking about doing that in this city for the last 2 decades. So, you know, bring it on, but I'm skeptical. The other thing is that the jungle fulfills a clear need that emergency shelter does not and more dispersed locations do not, which is that it's a community. It's a community. People watch each other's backs. There are neighborhoods. All of the definitions of community are there. And to begin with an approach that doesn't recognize that people have a need for community and they choose community over other options, I think is not to regard people as people.
Okay.
Just a second. Your question earlier, with an understanding in the spirit was it was intended, the question, you know, do people need to live like this or do, you know, if you're asking that of me, my instant reaction is one of anger and instant, like, who are you? But that's the question the city answered and made a decision about me. You know, do I need to live like this? Apparently not, you know, and so they chose to remove me. You know, you have a really, really, really over important sense of your own freedom when you live like this because it's all you have. You know, you might live in a way that other people disapprove of, but you know, choosing to do so is everything. You know, when you do not have the option to exclude people that are undesirable, as in the shelters, that's when your stuff disappears and things like that. You have to have the freedom to choose how to live, obviously. My instant, you know, who are you kind of reaction, that's a dangerous question to toss around, really. Actually, you know. Anyway.
Thanks. Brandy, we've got people who want to help in some way. They're saying, if an individual wanted to come by with food, clothes, donations, would that be welcomed? How should a person go about giving?
Absolutely, it's welcome. We've encountered some church group members, some teens, adults, some just families with small children that have collected items and brought sack lunches and stuff. I guess I've been blessed. I've personally ran into them while I was walking down the street under the bridge. I see a group of several adults and children carrying backpacks, so I'm thinking, whoa, that's pretty cool. I think we're going to finally get something, and they all want to know if it's okay to go into the jungle. They don't know what to do. Absolutely, you go into the jungle, and you tell them you have food and you have supplies and you want to help them, and you love them, and we're people, and just basically, you know, I mean, they'll come running. Somebody will be there to represent, show you around, you know, and just talk to us. Most people are afraid of what they don't know. If you're not there, you don't know. You might see some stuff you don't like, but you won't be disrespected. Nobody's going to chase you with a gun or a stick or anything like that. You can bring your children even, you know. And there's some representatives, you know, that you could probably contact to have a more formal thing if you wanted to do that as well. But yes, absolutely. You could literally pull off the freeway and just, you know, say, hey, I got food, and we'll come running.
And I noticed if anybody wants a more guided entry into the jungle, I saw there's some people from Heroes for the Homeless here, and they take people out once or twice a month, depending on what season it is, on Saturday mornings. So here's a question. How should the city be respectful to jungle residents but also combat the significant drug problem it incubates? And I'm going to put this question to Donald, I guess, because we haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I think, you know, it started with housing. You know, if you got low-income housing and not affordable housing.
I sense this is your issue and all of our issues.
And then you have mental health for people that need mental health. Those people who want houses, and you show them, like she said, give her keys where she can go to her front door knowing that she'll be able to pay for that, she'll willingly leave. Am I right?
Absolutely, honey, absolutely.
How about you, Kevin? Right? Got anything to add to that?
What you think?
Housing is the first obvious step.
There
because,
you go.
You know, the requirements to, well, you got to be sober, sobriety is a really hard thing to contemplate as much as I've, you know, been sober in a tent. Sobriety, getting sober in a tent, becoming sober, and when you're trying to figure out where you're going to sleep tonight is a ridiculously hard task. Housing first.
Okay.
Is that happening in the jungle?
Now you got housing. Now you got housing. So you didn't got all the people out of there that wanted housing. So the people that want to stay there, now you look for the people that has mental problems. You know, you weed them out.
Tim, you look like...
I think that...
I'm sorry?
What's that?
There's a lot of thought.
So,
whatever. I mean...
So, just to we're trying to create...
So what I was saying is, then you have the people that need psychological help, mental
Well, we've
help.
Got we've got some, but to this larger, we're also trying to make this a space where people can talk about the issues without doing personal attacks. And what I hear in that complaint is also a sense that, all right, we got your point up there. We got a sense of skepticism about the industry that rises up to support.
Please.
All right. We got what you're saying up there. We've got some skepticism about the system's ability to address this without being distracted by its own needs, by the system's own needs to grow. And
you know what we're doing right now. This has happened during a planning stage, if I had actually been able to know what was going on in the council meetings and. On a much less, small, informal scale than this, if I had been able to even give any input, even if nothing had changed, I would feel a lot better about what's going on, just having been heard, And
Okay, here's a question from somebody in the audience. It's about treatment, mental and physical. I guess with physical, it could be going to a doctor. With mental, it could be going to the methadone clinic, as you do, Kevin, for example. How do you find ways to access it? Oh, specifically with women, it says. So I guess, Randy, when you need to go to the doctor, if you need some counseling or something like that, how do you access those things?
Personally, myself, as part of my problem, I don't have mental issues or, so to speak. I do, of course, suffer from depression, slight anxiety. I have the ups and the downs. It's a hard-knock life, but... physically, I've always been in a lot of pain. My problem is I just don't ever go to the doctor because it'll go away by itself. But being where I am located, I'm right on the bus line, and like I said, we utilize Peter's Place. They give out bus tickets. If you know how to use the resources, like 211 or something like that, you can find Orca cards. You can find people that will take you. There's a free solid ground bus, I think, that will take people certain times, certain days, and drop them off at these clinics in local areas where they need, you know, where there's more resources. But, you know, hey, it never hurts to just ask. Hey, people come, panhandlers on the corner, for instance, any help needed, need help, or they'll write specific things. When people stop and ask what you need, you know, I need a ride to the doctor on Friday. Sometimes you never know. Other than that, we walk. I walk everywhere, or I ride my bicycle. I don't rely on public transportation. That's a whole other issue.
Okay, I have Donald?
When I say the housing first, because when I tell you that I slept up under the Spokane Street Bridge after coming from the jungle, it was six of us up under the bridge. They build that new overpass, and they wanted us to move out of there. Every last one of us have an apartment that was up under that bridge. None of us is homeless again out here now. So I know that will work. Yeah. That's a positive note there. It will work.
Okay, thanks. Now, we've got a bunch of questions that are coming in, and only a few more minutes left before we're going to go to a more open format where I'm hoping you guys can stay around and answer a few questions one-on-one if people want to come down and ask you those. But we're going to go till about 8:30 with these questions and try to bang through a bunch of them. One is, how do you deal or help young people? What do you do when youths end up in the jungle? Do any of you have experience with that? Have you had it? Kevin?
The house in Lake City I had was essentially what they call a crash pad, like a drug house, and there were kids that came through, to my lasting regret. Those kids need to be shown, like, you know, the older people and what happens to you if you don't stop, you know, and if you're... There's so many resources available for children, number one, like, you know, I mean, hell, your neighbor will probably help any kid just out of the, you know, kindness of his heart. But...
Are you still talking about Lake City or in the jungle specifically?
Children in the jungle are a rarity in the extreme, you know, but...
Rare.
Young people, you know, customers might come up. And every time they do, you know, the older ones of us, you know, don't bother trying to talk about it. I think it's a pointless waste of time. You have to want to change yourself, and kids are invincible. It's hard. You know, I mean, no one was going to tell me what to do when I was 18. I knew everything.
So you say, you see, if young people come in, you say mostly they'd be customers? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah. Almost universally, yeah.
Okay, so they're coming in to buy.
In my particular area, yes.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, are we ready to, that's a good question. Are we ready to ask for experiences that are in the audience? Who did you, we've got another person with a, can the mic captain go up there and.
I was homeless for about a year and a half, and I got housing a year ago. I was in the system of homeless shelters, and every night I was afraid. So I totally understand why people in the jungle who have a community feel that they don't want to go into the shelter system.
All right, thank you. We've got another one in the front row.
Whatever face I put on this, you know, not knowing what's in front of you is terrifying.
Okay.
You know, even
so
if you
another
are.
Question. It looks like we've got several questions, many questions in the audience too. So,
am I good? Hi. My name is Cecilia. I'm homeless. I was at Nicholsville since 2013. I was advocating for Camp Dearborn when they fired their poverty pimp of an organizer. And I'm now one of the organizers for Operation Jungle Defense. I have some experience with UGM's process of housing the homeless. And I'm just curious because I heard at a recent city council meeting that there's something like $100,000 being paid through the city government to fund the UGM missionaries. One of the things that I have heard is that I experienced with several people who were at Nicholsville that they received housing and then eventually got kicked out for whatever reason. What is the experience that you guys may have had with UGM's outreach and whether they're actually engaging with you to find out what your needs are, or are they handing you flyers and telling you where to go and possibly expecting you to pray with them? Because I've heard that there's some proselytizing going on, even though they claim that they're not actually doing this. Yeah, can any of you speak about this?
Just very quickly, Jeff Lilly, in an interview that we're doing Monday, said that they're not proselytizing. So, but I am interested in your perspective to learn if that's true or not.
As far as outreach goes from the Union Gospel Mission, I've received pretty much nothing. I saw them yesterday for the first time ever, where I've been camping since September on, there's actually a Parks Utility Road that's accessible from the highway. And they pulled in two vans deep, and I came out of my tent screaming, "Oh, you finally showed up right before the sweeps happened. What do you know?" And they gave me some sandwiches and a backpack and a cardboard piece of paper with their number on it, and a little other piece of cardboard with outreach information, which was essentially the shelter numbers, food bank numbers, everything 211 offers us, and every homeless person in Seattle already has those resources. So that's not outreach. They did outreach as far as being there to offer us food and snack. They did say they would move our stuff and our bodies physically from one place to another so long as we weren't within the jungle. They advocated for, once again, they don't want the sweeps to happen. They're on our side, and that was pretty much it. Now, I do know they come every Tuesday and Saturday under the bridge on Dearborn Street, but I never know when they're there because they don't bother to come up that far to tell me, so... that's all. I haven't had any preaching or anything like that happen in my own experiences. I'm just speaking for myself. Some are more God-loving, I guess, you know. But they're nice folks anyway. At least they do come. But then on the other hand, there's other people within the jungle that get very special treatment, and they are visited personally 3, 4, 5 times singly with carloads of stuff.
That's bothersome.
It's very bothersome.
Okay, here's a question. Is there a group that represents the people who live in the jungle? Now, I know, Brandy, you're associated with a group that's organized in opposition to the clearing, Operation Jungle Defense. Are there other, Tim, how about you? Do you know about any other groups that claim at least to represent large portions of the jungle?
Well, this is precisely the problem, is that that's not where we begin. I mean, if we are trying to do work that is in the best interest of the people who are living in the jungle, the place that we should begin is to ask them what they need. And that hasn't been part of the process.
Well, I think that the spirit of this question that this person asked is there a group made up of jungle residents that have banded together in some way to try to interact with the public?
There's organizing going on in the jungle right now to stop the clearance, to articulate their demands, not so much to bring in access to services, but more to improve the environment of the area. Those are concrete things that can be done that the people in the jungle are saying are a priority for them that apparently hasn't risen to a priority for the city yet.
Okay, and we have a clarification of a point here. We had talked about $100K that was going to Union Gospel Mission. We've received clarification that that's flex funding from the state for basically for rent, for hotel stays. It's not payment directly to Union Gospel Mission.
And you can't pay directly to Union Gospel Mission if you're the city, because they have anti-gay discriminatory hiring policies. The city cannot enter into a contract with them. Yes.
Okay, what is the, this is a quick question, we'll just go boom, 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 maybe a final question. What is the best case scenario outcome of this meeting? Start with you, Brandy.
On the 6th of June or after, I will be continue to be left alone and sleeping in my tent, which I've called home for a long time. I hope that will continue rather than trying to keep focusing on where they're going to. I'm reminded of a movie somehow where we're all placed on an island and we have to fight for survival and the last man standing wins. It's not that it's really like that, but it feels like that. So I would just hope that progress continues and we all can continue to work together, because no matter what, we are a community and we all don't have to like each other, but we have to live with each other.
Just real quick, the best case scenario is what happened here for me. During mic check, there was about 10 people here, and then all of you came. And just knowing that that many people are concerned for me and mine is really, I mean, thanks for coming, really.
That's it for this podcast extra from Speakers Forum. The Seattle Public Library's Central Library hosted this discussion on June 3rd. Thanks to Joshua McNichols and Kate O'Connell Walters for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum.